All right, everyone, welcome back. And Ben Bruss, Ben, what's going on, man?
Nothing, man. Been a crazy weekend. Happy to be back. So we threw a surprise 60th birthday party for my dad. And when you get all the brothers together and the family together, the handles of Tito's go a little quick.
Yeah, I'm kind of scared for that this weekend with it being Easter. And then my mom, dad, and brother all have birthdays one day apart from each other.
And that is all this weekend? Are you celebrating all that?
We're celebrating all this weekend at my place. So
you're hosting too, and the cleanup's going to be the worst part.
Yeah, exactly. So there will be, you know, bottles of wine, champagne, beer, you name it.
Shout out to your fiance.
Yeah, she's going to, I mean, welcome to the family. So we are back. I think we're going to try to do more weekday episodes pending, you know, unless a guest needs us to kind of go with our schedule. So if you guys listen on a regular basis, let us know what days kind of work the best. We want to try to match that up. But we feel like the weekdays will be the best during the off season. Obviously, if there's breaking news that's major or something like that, then we will put together something because we're here for you. Just remember that. But it has been a good start, like we always say. Episodes are getting better. Guests are coming through more and more. We got another guest today, our guy Sam Vecini, who really helped promote the show when we first got started. He's kind of an NBA draft expert, if you want to call him that. He does a lot of he focuses on college basketball, but does a lot with the draft.
He's a fellow Star Wars fan.
So he's gonna join us here in a little bit for an episode, kind of talking about the draft and draft day decisions, and really kind of how it affects not only the NBA teams but a lot of college teams as well. Especially with the, you know, if you want to call it the new rule, the newer rule of being able to put your name in the draft without, you know, test the water without an agent, which is, I think, a smart rule and one that everybody should do.
I don't see how there's any harm in letting these kids test out to find out where they're looking like they're going to get drafted, if they're even going to get drafted.
Right.
Because if you're getting anywhere near
just feedback,
first
just
round, feedback. Exactly. Feedback is good too. What do I need to work on? Is it scoring off the dribble? Do I need to develop more of an outside jump shot? What is the tangible items that I can work on in the offseason and the college basketball season to help move me up the draft board and get me into the first round versus the second round? Because as we know, the second round doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at a guy like Justin Jackson. He tested the water last year, got his feedback, and now he's a projected lottery pick.
Well deserved.
Right. And you know, and you could see, yes, the consistency was there more this year, but he really developed more working on his outside shot and became more of the quote 3-and-D type player that he will be in the NBA. It's just things like that, man, that just really help. And you know, I hate when people kind of blast someone where, yeah, they might not be even close to a first-round pick, but they're going to go test the water without an agent. Literally any Division I college basketball player should.
A lot of the things that I don't like are, you know, the players getting scolded for, whether that be transferring or testing the waters or whatever they're doing that they're getting criticized for. It's just so ironic because these head coaches, like, they leave a program and, like, no one says anything.
Not even the head coaches. The people that are criticizing these kids are ones who are jumping from job to job. Like, it's like an accounting – it's like a guy in accounting who now gets a job offer from a Big Four, and he's the guy that's making – or criticizing the player from William & Mary making the jump to, like, Oklahoma State.
I urge people to think back when you were in college. Everyone's like, "Oh, I was an idiot, or I did this and I did that." Well, yeah, like, and these kids are just trying to figure out what the best decision is for them, because your basketball life and your basketball career is only going to last so long. And you know, I know that firsthand. I went from playing in front of the biggest crowd in college basketball history to playing in Lithuania. Yeah. I really just urge people to think about why these kids are doing it. And if they're doing it for the right reasons, that's a good thing, because there are a lot of idiots out there
Yeah, I mean, it's like anything
who
else.
have bad advice and are following the lead from someone who doesn't know what they're doing. So I don't think there's any harm. And I don't think if every underclassman who is not signed with an agent doesn't go into the draft, good. That's a good thing. That means we're making progress in creating a better ecosystem from college to the pros.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing too, and we'll touch on this with Sam, because me and him were kind of talking about it, texting each other when this happened. It's like a guy like Tyler Dorsey, who is not projected to be a first round pick, signs with an agent, he's going to make a lot of money. Like, there is money to be made in Europe, especially because he's of Greek nationality, plays for the Greece national team.
Game over.
Right. So, I mean, right there, even if he doesn't make the NBA and he wants to be a professional basketball player, like, that's his job, professional basketball player. That's what he wants to be. Yes,
Yeah.
I'm sure he would. His dream is to play in the NBA. His dream job is to be an NBA basketball player. If Olympiakos in Greece offers him six figures to be a professional basketball player, it's still making a professional decision. Just like you would if Smith and Company offered you a VP position. I mean, it's just what cracks me up. We're going to do an episode. I texted you this earlier today. We're going to do an episode. Where we're gonna air our grievances at people who bitch at kids, mostly about. And what really got me pissed off today was seeing that originally a 4-star recruit from Mississippi State was getting absolutely denied his release, and they eventually gave in. But you know, people tell me like, oh, the kid should honor his commitment. He know what he's knowing what he gets
Okay,
into.
and I can speak firsthand, obviously, and
Exactly.
I'm already getting
Yep.
mad that people are arguing against this, but
We're gonna
let's
get
stay on
into
this,
that.
and that's a
That
future
might be our
episode.
next episode.
Yeah, let's do it. It's
That
stupid.
might be our next episode. You know, even like a guy, a buddy of mine who played lacrosse at Air Force, is like responding like, I mean, this is just a joke, and this is lacrosse at Air Force. Yes, it's still Division One, but it's nowhere near obviously high Division One, you know, Power Five college basketball. So, I mean, it's all levels. We will get into that later, but this episode is going to be focusing on draft decisions. Like I mentioned, it'll be from strictly the college standpoint in terms of who we're talking about 98% of the time, especially this year where there's really only one international guy expected to go top 10, top 12, depending where you look at. With Sam Vecenie, he's kind of all over, but we still need your guys' help. Our boys at Redline Radio, who we love, are climbing up the charts. They're kind of the guys that helped us get together here. We want to join them in the iTunes chart rankings. So we need everybody to subscribe. We need everybody to listen. Tell your friends. Leave a review. Rate us, preferably 5 stars. If you do, leave a review. We will be doing raffles kind of throughout the year. You know, T-shirts from the store, possibly tickets down the road.
I mean, we'll do tickets.
Yeah,
I
yep.
mean, I obviously it's gonna matter
Where you are.
for where you are. I mean, I imagine.
Airfare not included.
Yeah, I mean, if you want tickets, let me know. I can definitely help you out. Just that's gonna be on your bang of the buck to get over flight and hotel. But we'll be doing that. But I don't like how you say preferably 5 stars. I mean, come on.
Hey, if they don't think if I welcome all feedback. If you don't think
I
we're
do.
5 stars, tell us why. Like, honestly, we do, you know, it's been
True.
tweeted out. We do want feedback. You know, what segments do you like? What segments do you want to hear more of? What segments do you want to hear in general?
I want to hear less of Nerd Alert. And
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
only happened once.
Yeah, you want to hear less Nerd Alert. But things like that, like let us know what, you know, what we can do to improve. Let us know what you guys like so we know what to focus on, what sort of guests you want to hear. Between Ben and I, we both have pretty good connections that we can get on a wide array of people, whether
Yeah,
they
that's
are.
the thing. It's like, I mean, I've showed Riggs like the list of people, and it's so spread across the
Yeah.
board. I mean, I don't know. I guess let's just try out a bunch and go with the feedback. I mean, you know, from announcers to broadcasters to coaches to former players, we'll mix it up and we'll find our groove. And before we get Vecini on, I'm sure we can touch on this. I cannot stand, as we get into this draft talk, how there is no better system for basketball. There's the NBA and then there's overseas. You look at anything else,
Oh, well, no, we'll get into that because the D League is getting much, much better.
it's getting better, but it's still stupid that it's taking this long. Like, I'm very frustrated by
It
that
was
because
trial and error, and now they found the right thing.
trial and error. I'll tell you where they trialed and errored right away: the salaries of these D
Yeah.
League players.
Yeah, we'll get in that with Vecini, but so this is he's getting ready to hop on. So we'll get into this interview. If you are a sponsor, just think you could be getting an ad read right here, right now. You just have to let us know. We are willing to get bought. So
I read,
if you
and I
want an
read
ad
good.
read, let us know. We both read well. We're both college graduates. So
One
this is
from
just
more of a educational school than the other.
hey, easy. But this is the interview with Sam Vecini. Again, follow the show at Fundamentally Sound PD. All right, and we are now joined with Sam Vecini. Sam, you can catch on Twitter at Sam_Vecini. You can check out his podcast, Game Theory Podcast, which I've been on. Obviously, I endorse it. It is a good podcast. Highly recommend listening to. You can read his work at Vice Sports and Sporting News. And we are welcome to have Sam. Sam, what's going on, man?
How are we going, guys? I'm pretty glad to be on here. I think I'm like one of the first like few guests.
You're the
Is that
second
right? Like,
after your next door neighbor at the Final Four.
Luke Wynn is. I mean, Luke's the best like college basketball writer alive. Like, we kind of all agree on that, right?
Yeah, I had a little fanboy when I was like starting
Yeah,
to
I
talk
had
to
to keep Riggs a little calm,
him.
but
Yeah.
I'm really glad though that. I follow you on Twitter already because when he said at Sam_Vecini, I was like, poor listeners, I have no idea how to spell that. So we're gonna Sam_Vecini.
Well,
Done.
thank you. Yeah, that should help people find me. I don't know if this does this go up on Barstool? Do you post this on there every day, Reegs, or
No,
every
we
show?
just posted on our stuff.
Nice. Well, regardless, I'm sure you have some stoolies following you. I mean, I love everything they do over there at Barstool. I think that Ben, that's how you ended up getting involved in this, right? You're a stoolie as well.
Yeah, so actually it goes back to when I was going into my senior year of college. Actually the guys on the team were making fun of me that I was like, "Hey, you guys got to check out this Big Cat guy." And like they're like, "Big Cat? What kind of name is that? Who's that?" And so actually I met Dan and I tweeted a picture. I was such an idiot. I go, "Welcome to Madison." Like he's never been to Madison before. And I remember then, we stayed in contact. We went to a doubleheader Cubs game in the bleachers, Cubs Cards, beat them both games, which is always good. And
Yeah,
then,
fuck the Cardinals.
of course. And
Yeah,
then
Sam's
as
a
Dan,
Pirates fan.
okay, well, he's part of the NL Central, so I'll welcome him. But then I got to know Carl and Dave well. And Chief, because I went to the holiday Christmas party and I went to a couple events, downtown. And as Dan ventured off into the bigger world of New York City, I'm stuck with the peasants of Carl and Dave.
No, I mean it's great. I still have. I don't. I'm trying to think if I met anyone other than Reegs. I don't know that I have from up around the Barstool area. And now they're in New York now, and I'm on the other coast in Los Angeles. I'm just waiting for them to open an eventual Los Angeles office,
Yeah,
and just like
there's really
begging
not
for
much
a
out
job.
there.
Yeah. I'll be begging for a Barstool job at some point if they ever move out here, I'm sure.
Well, you can just be
Yeah,
like the
they.
people that want a job and DM me and say, "Hey, how do I write about college basketball for Barstool?" Oh,
Yeah,
you want
I
my
do
job?
Yeah, seriously. Like there's like one person other than like at ESPN, there's like one person at every site who writes about college basketball.
Right.
So like they're basically like, "So how can, I get you fired so that I can then take your job and just fucking steal whatever
I
money you
had
get." So
someone DM me being like, "Hey man, so I really keep up with college basketball. I think I'm pretty smart. Like you might be able to like ravel me like what I know. I'd really like to help out. What can I do?" And I'm like, first off, you can just fuck all the way off. Second off, you can let's string together a couple sentences here.
Well, I think that, like, Portnoy does it the best, too. Like, you guys are, like, Barstool will post, like, these random-ass videos of, like, the people who come into the office, and they'll post, like, all this, like, the people who just, like, email them or DM them. They're just like, you gotta bring something to the table, right? Like, you gotta at least show me that you can put words together.
Some creativity or be clever or do something different.
Right. My favorites, we'll get, like, a group DM, and all of a sudden I'll get a DM, and it'll be like, you know, you and 12 other people are in this, and I just look, and it's like, everyone, like, you know, the us B-League people, too, not even people in New York, just, like, all, like, the beat, like, the, quote, beat writers, if you want to call them that, and it'll be like...
The blog writers.
Right, right, but then all of a sudden, like, Chief is the king, like, literally 30 seconds after I get the DM, I get the notification, Chief has left this group. I love it every time. It's like the biggest slap in the face.
He's like the nicest guy in the world too.
Oh, he's so nice. So nice. So, all right, let's get into this. You were in Phoenix.
I was, that's correct.
So we want to know what we want to touch on this last time. Luke was there too. You were at the Final Four, you were at the title game. What were your takeaways being there?
That the officiating in college basketball is fucking terrible, I would say is the biggest one, but like, that's just a fact at this stage. More than that though, I mean, I think that it kind of showed that Gonzaga really, you know, has arrived on the national stage, even beyond just what, you know, people who follow college basketball year round kind of understand. Like, it feels like this was the moment where they finally broke through into a bigger consciousness, I guess, is the best way to put it. And I know that they end up losing to North Carolina, but I could not personally find any storyline to, like, attach myself to with this North Carolina team. Like, I didn't really care about the redeem bullshit. Like, that you finished second in all of college basketball last season. What the hell are you redeeming?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I understand, like, you know, it sucks to lose in a title game, but at the same time, like, I just didn't really understand that narrative that, like, they had to, you know, win this title to redeem Roy Williams and all of the shit that they went through last year. Like, I don't know. I can't really get behind that, you know.
I can't either. You know, even you just saying that right there, if it was that big of a story, I feel like after the national championship game, after they won that, it's been unusually quiet. Like, my Twitter feed, the, you know, Sports Center, everything's been really quiet on the college basketball front. And if it was a bigger game and a bigger redemption, quote unquote, I feel like I'd be seeing and feeling more.
Yeah, like whenever, like Wisconsin, like for instance, like your teams are a great example of that. Everyone attached themselves to the Wisconsin teams, and everyone attached themselves to the Duke Okafor teams and the Kentucky Final Four teams. And I'm trying to think, like, who was there the year that you were in the Final Four? I don't even remember. But
that
like
was,
there was
an UConn, Scotty Wilbekin, Florida, Ben's Wisconsin team, and then the Julius Randle, James Young, Kentucky team.
Right, like. People attached themselves to Shabazz Napier, and Shabazz Napier became like this crazy ass story. And, you know, the Kentucky team was a crazy story. And like, even the Wisconsin 2015 team, you know, everyone loved the personalities on that team and the 2014 team. But like, there were,
that's right.
there was no like storyline in this Final Four that like I fully got behind in terms of North Carolina winning. I was surprised with the amount of negativity that came out in regard to Oregon. I think that a lot of people attached themselves to the Dana Altman thing because, I mean, let's be honest, like that whole situation with 3 years ago was handled in a very bullshit manner. But at the same time, like, I felt like it was a lot more negativity toward Oregon than I expected, even though it's very deserved. And then the final team was, you know, who did, I'm trying to think, like, who the hell
Frank,
did Gonzaga
Frank
play?
Frank Martin was the story.
Yeah, and, like, no one gives a shit about South Carolina, but, like, you know, Frank Martin's a really great guy. He is, you know, a cool story because of how intense he is on the sidelines, but he's also, like, a really great, like, dude as a person. He's just, like, super nice to talk to. You can, like, I'd literally never met Frank before the Final Four, and he's someone that, like, if you just walk up to him and have like a one-on-one question for him as a reporter, he'll stop and like totally talk to you. And the reason that I stopped him was, it's funny. I was texting Reegs. He's like, yeah, Frank Martin just said something real shitty about one and dones. And I was like, that doesn't sound like something Frank would say. So afterward, I went up to him after his press conference and asked him, and he like gave me like a very nuanced answer on one and dones. So I was able to use it in the thing I was writing at Vice. Like, great guy, that's fantastic, but I don't care about South Carolina basketball. I don't care about you know,
if
Oregon
basketball. Was the only way I would have felt let down about the Final Four.
Like, so it seems like you weren't let down then. Like, I was relatively let down, to be honest.
I mean, I felt like two of the five best teams were in the title game, which is all I asked for in the NCAA tournament. Like, give me two of the 10 best teams in the country.
And you're happy. And you're still okay with that after everything we talked about last podcast?
Oh, no. I mean, like, I feel let down from the title game, but in terms of heading into the title game, like, I'm glad it was Gonzaga, North Carolina. Like, I did not want to see South Carolina versus New UNC or South Carolina versus Oregon.
And again, I'm going to comment on how the first 2 days, the Thursday and Friday, and the championship game, those are usually the games that draw, like, the biggest casual fan, the ones that take off work and go out for beers and watch the Thursday and Friday upsets. And then the national championship game, obviously everyone's watching that in general. Those two little segments there, those were the worst. Everything else was great. The Saturday-Sunday games of the first weekend were great. Yeah. Then you move into the UNC-Kentucky game. There were some intriguing matchups in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games. Exactly. And obviously, Chioza, or I'd probably say his name.
Nailed it this time.
Nice. No, I don't want – that's the thing. I've seen it so many times now, and I'm terrible with names that I'm remembering it. I don't want to. But, yeah, all I'm saying is that sucked because, something was taken from us. It had the as Luke said, the recipe to become a great title game. But I was overall pleased with everything else in between the first weekend and the last.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that the title game was kind of – there was a real buzz about it from Saturday night through like Monday afternoon in Phoenix. Like, everyone was super excited that we had, you know, two of the top four or five teams, whatever you want to call it, in the country facing off in a title game, because it never seems like that happens. You know, I'm trying to think, what, 2015, I guess
Wisconsin Duke
was probably a good example of that. Right.
I would say like two of the top five.
But like this game, this weekend or last weekend, I guess, it was very anticipated. It was very, we were excited to get this battle of front courts. We were excited to see, two of the, traditional college basketball wet dream point guards in Joel Berry and Nigel Williams-Goss, who I both think are a little bit overrated. But like, it was stolen from us, and the refereeing, the officiating in college basketball, it needs to improve in some capacity. If I was running the NCAA, I would be making a significant investment in
finding
a way to get full-time officials.
That's great. So you'd make an investment into doing that. Even if you had full-time officials, I don't know if that fixes the problem. I think you need something beyond that. Like, what are they going to do when they are full-time officials? Are they training them? Are they taking them to seminars? What are they doing to fix it?
Yeah. I mean, this is something I talked to, I was at West Coast Conference Media Day 2 years ago. And this is something I talked to, like, the West Coast Consortium of Officiating, like the people who do the Pac-12 and the West or the Big West and Mountain West Conference officiating. He was like, yeah, we're doing all sorts of training in the off season for our officials and stuff. And then last year was, only topped by this year in terms of officiating ineptitude. So it's a problem that's getting worse. I think that if you had full-time officials, what you could do is you could say, hey, we're going to pay you $150,000, $200,000. Stop having a roofing company like John Higgins, for instance, and stop having stop having these other side businesses that you run to make ends meet. We're going to pay you full time. You're going to work solely in officiating because this is what, your job is now. we want you to train more. We want you to watch as much tape as possible. But more than that, I think that one thing that they could do is that they could really reduce the amount of travel for officials, because I don't know that a ton of people understand just how much officials work throughout the season. Like, it's not crazy for someone like a John Higgins who works like all these crazy games. And I bring him up because I actually think he's a pretty good official. And I think Reeves would definitely disagree with me on that. But
he's
like,
had
actually,
couple rough outings, but
I don't think he's terrible.
But like, I actually think he's a pretty good official. And part of the problem is that he works like 100 games, 115 games a season, or like however many, you know, however many days there are in the season, he works like all but like 6 or 7 days. So what ends up happening is he gets overworked and starts to miss calls and starts to have all sorts of problems. So like, I think that if you made them full time, you'd be able to let them rest more. You'd be able to get them more focused on their job, and you'd be able to, you know, hopefully institute some sort of training procedures for the off season that are more effective than what we have now.
Yeah. No, I agree. And the NCAA has enough money. Let's put it that way. I mean, we know how much they make off the tournament alone.
Right.
That entity, quote unquote, can do something about it. Let's just put it that way. But let's jump back into real college basketball talk and not talk about the refs who shouldn't be the star of the championship game. Let's go back to some players that played. Who do you think hurt or helped themselves the most in terms of draft stock in the Final Four?
I think that Zach Collins probably helped himself the most. He had that monster game in the Final Four where he had like 15 points. And it's funny, right as I said Zach Collins, Jeff Goodman just tweeted, Zach Collins is signing with an agent and declaring for the NBA draft. So that was hilarious timing. But I think that he really helped himself, because if you know about like Collins' background, kind of, so he started, I believe, like 1 year out of the last 5 years of his career as a 19-year-old freshman now, because he went to Bishop Gorman in Las Vegas. He was stuck behind Steven Zimmerman and Chase Jeter. And, you know, that makes
outstanding college players.
Yeah, that's that's not exactly an ideal endorsement of Bishop Gorman, and that they had this guy who's going to become a McDonald's, or who was a McDonald's All-American, and who's going to become a top 17 or whatever pick in the NBA draft. He'll probably go lottery in this NBA draft, sitting behind them. But nonetheless, he was a late bloomer that still didn't start this year. He only played 17 minutes a game. So I feel like I had him at like 21 going into the NCAA tournament. Like, I knew who he was. I had a lot of experience because I watched a lot of Gonzaga being out here on the West Coast. But even though he was a McDonald's All-American, like, I feel like a lot of people just didn't have as much, you know, experience with him necessarily as they did with other elite level prospects. So for him to go off in a Final Four setting like he did, you know, blocking 6 shots or 7 shots or whatever against South Carolina, he's really good at contesting everything around the rim. That's one thing that I always bring up with him, is that even though he's not like hyper long and he's not super strong, he just contests everything, and he's good at using verticality. That's something that Chema Karnowski has been excellent at for 4 years, 5 years now. And it seems like either Gonzaga's coaching staff has rubbed off with him in that capacity, or Karnowski has rubbed off on him in that capacity. It's, you know, where he goes in the draft, I think it's going to be dependent on the way that the lottery shakes out. Jeff is saying right now he thinks 8 to 20. I think that's about right. If he told me he goes as the first big man taken, like the first traditional big man taken in the draft, I would not be surprised if he fell a little bit, just because he has a rough pre-draft process and there's just not a lot of sample out there and teams are risk averse. I wouldn't be surprised either, but I think he solidified himself as a top 20 to 25 pick in the NBA draft. And you know, that's an excellent place to be.
And who do you think hurt themselves the most?
Who do I think hurt themselves in the Final Four?
I have a name that jumps out. I want to see if you say it.
I would probably say Dylan Brooks.
That's the name I was thinking.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't have a good NCAA tournament at all. And I think that when you kind of look at his game, it's very questionable where his NBA fit is, and it
always where does it translate?
Yeah, and it always has been. Like, he's not a great defender. He's 6'6 with like a 6'7 wingspan. Whenever he got to Oregon, I feel like a lot of people like don't really remember this now, but like he was kind of known as like a selfish-ish player. Like, he was, you know, he'd never really passed the ball, kind of like a Stacey Patton black hole of basketball. For people who remember the movie Eddie, he was really, really selfish, and he developed that over the course of his career. He really bought into what Dane Altman was selling. He has like a 23% assist rate. That's really good. He then bought into being able to shoot the basketball, or improved as a shooter. He's 40% shooter this season, and that's fantastic, but he's not a like elite level athlete. He's small. He's best as a power forward. And I don't really know where the fit is. And I think we saw a lot of the issues against length against North Carolina with, you know, guys like Justin Jackson, who's pretty darn good, who I wrote about for Vice this week. And, you know, shout out names on North Carolina. My brain is still hurting.
For
North Carolina. Yeah.
Oh, like, shout out names.
Who are some of the long players on North Carolina? Like Tony Bradley's one.
Jackson's long for a wing.
Yeah, Jackson. I mean, Jackson did a number on him. Jackson also did super well on Tyler Dorsey.
Monk the game before.
Yeah, that's why I'm a little bit higher on him as a draft prospect than I was coming in.
I was scared how high I was on him.
Yeah, he really improved his feet. You know, if you go back and watch like a lot of his tape defensively, he's really good now at fighting through screens because he uses his feet. Like, he's always on the balls of his feet now and is able to kind of leverage his strength to get through screens and really battle. Plus, he's 6'8" and he's big and he can just actually fight through screens. So that helps, even though he has really high hips, which can sometimes hurt in that way. So, I like Justin Jackson too. I think he helped himself a little bit. That's really it. Like, it wasn't like a standout performance.
It wasn't really a standout like player year where like you have like, you know, like Alonzo Ball making it to the Final Four or someone like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. So
if you look at the top 10, you know, projected picks in like a mock draft, there's nobody who made it into the Final Four. I tell you, I guess we can broaden it out a little bit. He didn't really help himself, but I think he solidified that he's a freak and going to be highly drafted, as I was impressed with Josh Jackson.
Yeah, I was impressed with Jackson too. I mean, he wasn't great in their game against Oregon necessarily, but he's still just like a hyper competitive, like
he just shows you like he's got that it factor.
Well, to mention, he shot 46% from the three-point line over the last 15 games.
Yeah, so if you look at his full-season numbers now off of catch-and-shoots, he had a 59% effective field goal percentage, which is in the top 25% of all Division I basketball players. I think it's in the top 22%, actually. He is improved as a jump shooter because if you look at what he does now compared to what he was doing early in the season, he's much better at kind of using a hop and getting into rhythm with his jump shot, even though I think his mechanics are still problematic in terms of the way he's going to stretch it out because his shot flattens out a decent amount. The amount that he moves the ball back towards his head makes it a little bit difficult to release the ball at the 90-degree angle that, you know, shooting instructors and shooters, Ben, you could talk to me about that even better than I can.
I'm enjoying listening.
That they always talk about, and the people that can really shoot always talk about. So I think that he's going to have issues moving back to the NBA three-point line a little bit. But I do think that his athleticism, his killer mentality, he's so productive because of the aggressiveness in the way he utilizes his athleticism. Like, sometimes you get guys that are killer athletes like Cody Zeller or, you know, someone like that who tests off the charts athletically but doesn't really know how to utilize it on the basketball floor or apply it on the basketball floor. Josh Jackson gets every single bit out of his athleticism in every way, just due to the way that he attacks the game constantly. Like, he never lets the game come to him. He's constantly the one that is attacking and going toward the basket and, you know, going at guys defensively. So I like guys like that. The question with him is, I mean, NBA teams that I've talked to still need to do work on him off the floor. He had those two incidents, you know, one with LeGerald Vick and the is it Mackenzie Calvert, the girl on Kansas's women's basketball team that I don't really know all of the details of and I don't really want to speculate on. He also had the hit and run incident that got him suspended for the first game of the Big 12 tournament. So,
no big deal. Slap on the wrist.
But teams need to do their homework on him to see how much they can trust him off the floor. Because in a draft like this, where you have guys like De'Aaron Fox and Dennis Smith and Malik Monk, and it goes on and on all the way through to like number 10, I think that the trust factor really does matter in some way. Like, you really do need to be able to have faith in the guy that you're selecting, because, you know, there are going to be a lot of really good players in this draft. Like, I think that if you told me there are six all-stars in this draft, that'd be not surprising to me at all.
So
name those six then.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I'd be curious. Or don't even name six. Just give me your like locks that will be all-stars and maybe a first team type and be all NBA player.
Well, I have Markelle Fultz. I think that he absolutely can do that. You know, Lonzo Ball, I think, has potential to do that. The two things that he needs to improve are he needs to improve as a ball handler. I think that a lot of people haven't really realized that yet, that he can get a little bit loose with his handle, and I think it slows him down when he's going to attack the rim, and it hurts him a little bit in pick and roll settings as well. He really needs to be able to, you know, tighten up that handle and be able to go around screens and get into the teeth of the defense a little bit more consistently. That's something that's doable. I mean, this guy is preternaturally gifted in terms of hand-eye coordination and in terms of basketball IQ, and he has an insane level work ethic. So I think he's going to get there. It's just, you need to be able to, you know, actually show it to me on the basketball floor. I'm a big fan of Jason Tatum as well. I think he's going to average 20 points a game in the NBA. If you told me De'Aaron Fox or Malik Monk made an all-star game, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm a little bit higher on Fox than I am on Monk. Monk's margin for error is going to be razor thin in the NBA. He essentially has to be a, you know, 42% three-point shooter or whatever he was this year. Otherwise, it gets really difficult for him because he doesn't really contribute in a lot of other ways in the NBA, right?
Yeah, no, I would take Fox over Monk just because of the playmaking ability, and he brings different dimensions versus being more of a one-dimensional shooter like Monk.
Right, and then you look at Dennis Smith. I mean, Dennis Smith has a higher upside than anyone that isn't Markelle Fultz, in my opinion. That guy is just an incredible athlete. If you see him live, you just like your eyes pop out of the skull. You know what I mean? Like, he is.
Yeah, you know, he kind of reminds me of when I grew up watching Derrick Rose live. Like, you'd go in the gym.
Say he reminds me of myself when I was young.
He reminds me of myself.
I thought you were going there too.
Yeah, right. when Derrick Rose, who reminds me of myself as well, used to like get a rebound and go coast to coast, and you would just be like, "What am I watching? Like, is this real?" Like, they have that same type burst where it's just you can't teach it.
Yeah, and again, like, Smith has similar concerns to what's kind of played itself out with Derrick Rose, other than the off-the-floor stuff that happened this summer. Smith is very slight of frame, and he has injury history. I mean, he tore his ACL when I was there at Adidas Nations last summer. So, you know, we need to hope that his body, you know, stays with him and holds up over the long haul. If it does, I think that guy is going to be like a, you know, 5-6-7-time all-star. That guy, it's unbelievable what he can do on the basketball floor. And then the underrated two that I think I really like Miles Bridges a lot. I think that a lot of people kind of tuned out Michigan State after they lost those early games. He is one of three players over the last 25 years or so. One is Ben Simmons, one is Jason Tatum, to put up like whatever his per game averages were. I think they're 16.8 points, like 8 rebounds, like 2 assists, and like a 56% true shooting percentage. Yeah, like only 3 freshmen over the last 25 years have done that, and they just happen to all be in the last 3 drafts. So like, or in the last 2 drafts, I'm sorry. I think that we kind of underrated everything that he was bringing on the basketball floor. Plus, you look at his athleticism, it's immediately translatable. He is kind of prototypical for the modern NBA because he's, you know, stout enough through his torso and through his lower body to where he's going to be able to guard fours on the block. But he's also just hyper quick and able to play the three if you want to play him there. He can shoot a little bit. I think his shooting percentage is probably a little bit high for what it'll be immediately in the NBA, but he's a hard worker. And like I said, the athleticism is going to immediately translate. So you throw that with the passing, with the rebounding, with the ability to play off the ball and cut toward the rim. I really like him more and more, the more I consider the way that his game is going to fit at the next level.
You mentioned a lot of the point guards. I really like this class from a point guard standpoint. And you mentioned obviously the ones everyone's talking about from the collegiate level being Fox, Ball, Smith. What about the second tier? Like, how deep is this point guard class? Because I'm high on Juwan Evans and Monty Morris.
And yeah, are there
other names that from the college standpoint that people should look at in like this tier two, if you want to call it that, after you know the lottery, the for sure lottery picks. And just how good is this class from the point guard standpoint?
Yeah, I really like both of those guys as well. I have them both rated as first round picks right now. If Juwan Evans was in last year's draft class, I tweeted this out yesterday whenever I released my big board. I think I would have Evans like right around 10 or 11 on my big board last year.
Right.
He's really freaking good. The problem for him is that he's super small, obviously, so there are going to be problems defensively. But he's also really poor at finishing around the rim.
Yeah,
one way that he
game.
It did, but one way that he compensates it is that he was third in Division I this year in points off of runners and floaters. So he has that kind of like, you know, like the 8-foot range shot down to where teams are going to have to kind of play out on him a little bit more, and it'll give him a little bit more diversity in terms of the way that he's able to attack the rim and score around the rim. But he's a good shooter, tremendous pick and roll instincts, maybe the best or second best behind Mark Fultz pick and roll guard in this entire NBA draft. He just has the preternatural, you know, understanding of the way to attack in the pick and roll to get guys, you know, on his hip or on his backside and keep them there. He does an excellent job of that. Monte Morris, I think that he prototypes as the ideal backup point guard in today's NBA because he can really shoot it. He's really good in the pick and roll again. Obviously, the crazy assist to turnover ratio, 4.6 throughout his entire college basketball career, led the country in 3 of 4 seasons. He's just so consistent, and he's a great playmaker for others. That guy is going to be in the NBA for a decade, I think. And if you're picking at the end of the first round, like number 25, 26, 27, I mean, what team wouldn't want that, I guess? Like, that is incredibly valuable.
So the Spurs found their next point guard. They got their point guard for a decade.
Wouldn't surprise me. And then the other guy that I really like that I feel like has been underrated is the National Player of the Year, Frank Mason. He is one of the best.
He's an interesting NBA candidate.
I was just gonna ask real quick. So I guess I'll name a couple guys. So like a Frank Mason and like a Monte Morris, like – how do you see some of these older, you know, more experienced college guards fitting in and like, are they going to be better than these young guys coming out? Like, where do they have an advantage? Where do they have a disadvantage?
Well, the big thing that I think all three of these guys do, I mean, Juwan Evans is still pretty young. He's a sophomore. I think he's like 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But like Monte Morris, Frank Mason, like those two particularly, what they do is they shoot really well off the dribble and they can also pass. Being able to shoot off the dribble, I think, is an incredibly underrated skill in today's NBA. It's all about efficiency and all about like being able to knock down catch and shoot jumpers. But if you're a point guard, you still really need to be able to create your own shot off the dribble because it creates a lot of space for your teammates and for you know, the way defenses have to actually attack you in the mid-range. So Frank Mason being able to knock down 52% of his threes this year, a lot of those off the dribble going to the left. And Monte Morris has always been a really good shooter as well with the ball in his hands. There's the one that's in my memory, like it's emblazoned there, is he hit this like fadeaway to win a game in the Big 12 tournament. And I forget who it was against, but like that shot will translate immediately to the NBA because if you look at the way defenses are kind of letting point guards go, they're fine giving up that mid-range shot now. They don't want to leave defenders and help because they don't want to give up the three-point shot because it's theoretically a higher point per possession or point per shot if you can get an open three-pointer than it is against an open two. So the way defenses are attacking now, getting that mid-range shot off is really effective. And I think the best example of that is probably Yogi Ferrell this year in Dallas. Yogi's always been a tremendous shooter off the dribble to where his size isn't really necessarily a hindrance for him. You see it with Seth Curry as well in Dallas. And part of it is that Rick Carlisle's a genius, right? Like he totally just understands how to get these guys, you know, separation in the pick and roll and understands how to space the floor in a way. But, you know, these guys like Frank Mason, Monte Morris, you know, Shake Milton's an interesting one, although he's not great in the pick and roll yet. I think he might want to stay another year. Jawan Evans is great at it. I'm trying to like look through my list right now.
Is Rick Carlisle going to put Tony Romo in?
Oh God, I hope so. Do you guys see his jumper today in practice? It is wet, man.
It was not bad.
Like he has a better jump shot than I'm trying to like think
of. Both of you.
Well, better than me for sure, but he also has better jump shot than like De'Aaron Fox for sure.
He's a better jump shot than NBA MVP Derrick Rose.
Do you know like how many like D League guys are pissed at him right now because they want like a 10 like they wanted to be signed on a 10 day and now there's no roster spot for them to get in one game so they can wear their NBA jersey and tell their fam they made it.
Yeah, that's a good question. I've kind of wondered that. Like, do you think that there are D-League guys that are pissed about that?
Probably. I mean, look at what Poitras has done for the Sixers over the last week since his call-up. The Mavericks are
well,
perfect.
Well, it's like the difference between a week and a day, though, right? Like, you're not getting a week's worth of salary. You're getting a day's worth of salary.
Yeah, but you get to put that jersey on Instagram, and then your Tinder goes hot, and then all these girls are after you, or you can say for the rest of your life you played in the NBA.
Yeah, also I would imagine that like the Tinder isn't exactly hopping in Fort Wayne or Santa Cruz.
The South Dakota team. They're just the D League locations are, and they added one in Wisconsin, Oshkosh. Are you kidding me?
Are you going out for Oshkosh next year, Ben?
I tell you what, I work for a startup technology company. I've kind of joked about this. If we sell it in 3 years, I'm going to make a comeback to go play for the Windy City Bulls or the Oshkosh Bucks or whatever they are. I'm making the comeback.
Oh my God. You played for a year in like Lithuania, right?
Yeah. I played for the Bucks summer league team and then went to Lithuania, but it was pretty funny. Like I was with Josh Gosser yesterday and he's got a bunch of buddies that they brought along and they're Bucks fans and they saw John Hammond drive by. They go, Ben, there's John. I was like, you cut me.
What did John even like react or anything?
He was just waving like he was the mayor. Like he's like, yeah, we got the sixth seed. We're going to the playoffs. I got the Greek freak and Jabari, poor Jabari, and with two torn ACLs. And how crazy about Malcolm Brogdon?
Yeah, is there a Malcolm Brogdon this year?
Yeah.
Or who is a Malcolm Brogdon this year? Is it Monty Morris?
I don't know if it's like,
no.
I mean, it's kind of tough to say because like Malcolm was a two guard that, you know, played right off ball and ran off screens in college.
Just trying to think of the senior that goes a little too late than he should and ends up being productive right off the bat.
Yeah. I think Monte is one of those guys. I think Josh Hart can be one of those guys.
Yeah.
Josh, what he does super well is that
it's a really good comparison.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the thing with Malcolm is that Malcolm is longer. He's a little bit stronger throughout his body. And
he's longer than Josh Hart.
Yeah. Josh Hart's like 6'5", like a 6'7" wingspan. Brogdon is like 6'6" with like a 6'10", 6'11" wingspan.
Wow.
Yeah, and the other thing with Malcolm is, I don't know if you've ever like shook Malcolm Brogdon's hand.
Dude, I guarded him when he was at Virginia.
Biggest fucking hands that you will ever like see from a wing that's like 6'4 or 6'5 in your life. Like, he's just able to palm basketball and he can do whatever he wants with the basketball. Hart's a straight line driver. He's not like, you know,
pull super up mid-range guy.
Yeah, like super differentiated with his handle. And, you know, Malcolm, he's slid into being a point guard more in the NBA, and that's something that Hart's not really going to have the capability of doing. So maybe like Monte is more of an apt comparison to Malcolm in that way. Another guy that I really like that doesn't really play either of those two positions is Semi Ojeleye. He's like 6'7", but he's like stout throughout his lower half and is going to be able to guard post players, especially in today's NBA. He also moves his feet really well on the perimeter defensively. I think he's going to be able to be like kind of an instant impact player there. And he shot it really well, both off the catch and off the dribble this year at SMU. He's really good whenever you give him space to leap. He's not a great leaper in tight quarters, and I think that might cause him problems at the rim in today's NBA, where there are just so many big rim protectors like Rudy Gobert and Hassan Whiteside. But if you play him off ball and you toss him lobs where he can like really get into a jump, he's going to have some value, especially there and especially in transition. He's like 22, 23, even though he's declaring early for the NBA draft. So that's kind of why I compare those two. Frank Mason, again, is another guy. Killer shooter off the dribble. I really like him. Jerron Blossom game, another super old player that I think would have gone in the top 40 of last year's draft had he decided to stay in. Again, like 6'7", 6'8", strong throughout his lower half, crazy leaper, crazy athlete. I think that he could make a relative instant impact.
I'm telling you, man, like even just having this conversation and looking at some mock drafts and talking about these different players, if I don't marry for height, like I'm not going to let my kid play basketball.
Well, why wouldn't you marry for height though?
Well, I mean, that's the goal. I need to find someone who's tall. Cause I beat the odds as it is. I was a 6'1", 6'2", white guy who played in the Big Ten and actually, you know, was able to do some stuff, but it's a rarity and it's only going to become more rare.
Yeah. I mean, as far as like high major guys, for sure. I think it's going to be more and more difficult for the Ben Brusts of the world to, you know, be able to carve out a niche. But then again, like as long as the person can shoot like you could, then I think everything's probably going to be fine. Right.
But
like,
no, that's what
everyone wants.
You need the height though. That's what I'm saying. I doubt there's any really hot volleyball players listening to this, but if you're out there,
you don't think that's our audience?
No, I don't think it is, but that's all right. I put the plug out there.
Hot female volleyball players, reach out to Ben Bross.
That are tall enough.
That is,
Ben.
Yeah, that is the new hashtag on Twitter. Get Brust a volleyball player.
Yeah, BB for VB.
There you go.
Yeah, but it's especially going to be tough for guys like you because like you essentially played off ball in college too. Like you played a little bit of point guard, but
no, I think I took the ball off the court like two times and I said, Coach, I'm not doing that again.
Like you were at least like capable of getting with
of course.
Trey Jackson was the point guard and you know, and, you were just there spacing
Koenig.
The floor.
Exactly. I was running around like a psycho, like I liked being off the ball so I could just look at everything and run around and try and rebound and get open. Like if I had the ball, I felt like everyone was looking at me. I just wanted to like sneak around and get open.
Well, really, you were just trying to exercise a little bit to stay in shape.
Exactly. I wish I had one of those like tracking things and could have saw like the routes I ran around there. Could have tried like spelling my name on the court.
This is actually a good question. What do you think of? You might be a little too close to the situation too, but what do you think of Bronson at the next level?
I don't think I'm too close to it. I really like Bronson. The fact that, you know, he's a gamer and he can shoot the piss out of it. I mean, he broke my single game, single season, and all-time 3-point field goal record. So,
oh, so you're pissed at him?
Yeah, I don't even like him. So now let's talk shit about him. No, I think he's a gamer. I think he hits big shots. The thing that I'd be interested is, I don't think he has that next level shiftiness or like stop and go speed.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
you need to have in the league.
I think he is good stop and go, but I agree with you on the shiftiness. The shiftiness is a big deal. And he also just doesn't bring enough for me when he's not scoring. You know, like, he's not going to be like a killer NBA defender. He's not a point guard. Like, I don't think he is. He doesn't really pass that all
probably,
that well.
That was probably a really bad decision for his pro career to have Dimitri Trice come and move him off the ball a little more. You know, because then you're labeling yourself as a smaller combo guard. And that's just not what you want to do. You gotta really lock in to what makes sense for your position that you're going to be in the next level.
Yeah, people ask me about him all the time. Like, I might get asked more like Bronson Koenig questions.
I'm surprised you get more Bronson than you do Nigel or Ethan.
Well, that's the problem.
I get more Bronson Koenig questions than I get, like, there are some first round picks where I don't get as many questions as I do about, like, Bronson Koenig.
Well, that's the biggest problem, especially for both. If you're more of a college fan or more of an NBA fan, you just assume good college player translates to good NBA player, as opposed to, you know, the guy who maybe is the third-tier college player who is better suited for the NBA or vice versa. You know, like, it's not surprising to see a first-team All-American not make it in the NBA. It's two different games. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. Like, they sit there and they know Bronson Koenig. Like, Bronson Koenig was probably the face of Wisconsin basketball this year. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Why isn't he's better, or I know him more than this guy. Why isn't he, you know, number 38 on your big board?
Yeah, and, like, the other thing with Bronson is he has the whole, you know, Native American backing as well, where, you know, there are a lot of people that are really hoping that he can make the NBA because he's taken such strong stances in favor of Native American rights. And I applaud him for that. I think it's fantastic that he's doing it. I think that Ben brought up a really kind of a key point, though, about him. Like, I haven't ruled him out as an NBA player just because that dude is a gamer in every single way. Like, if you told me he came off the bench for 5 years in the NBA and, like, just figured it out as a microwave scorer, I'd be like, I see it. I don't
like in my top 75, but,
like, I wouldn't be crazy surprised either.
Hey, Riggs, are we completely just losing Vecini right now?
Yeah, Vecini cut out there.
are we good?
You're back. You're good.
You're back.
Okay.
So it wouldn't shock you to see a guy like that make it.
Yeah, and for the record, I mean, it wouldn't shock me either. All I'm saying is what I can see the questions being of is that next level speed in a point guard.
Let me ask you guys a question after Riggs asks this.
Well, I was going to say what he's the perfect example for what the D-League has kind of turned itself into. The guys that – someone like Bronson, who's an in-betweener, you know, a tweener in terms of an NBA player, of let him go to the D-League and drop, you know, 16 a game and then get the call. Kind of like Yogi Ferrell.
Yeah, that isn't a bad comparison, really. I mean, Yogi's smaller, a little bit shiftier, but right. Bronson can really shoot it off the dribble. Like I said, like, guys who can shoot it off the dribble are at a decided advantage in terms of being lead ball handlers in today's NBA. You've seen it in terms of how someone like Ricky Rubio has, you know, despite having all of the natural, really preternatural talents in terms of the way that he thinks the game, you know, it's just really tough when you don't have a certain amount of shooting on the floor. And, you know, Ricky just puts you way behind the eight ball in that capacity.
Right.
What I wanted to ask you guys is there, like, I know that, like, I think about this with college football all the time, and I think about it in college basketball as well, because sometimes I just get way too into the weeds into this stuff. Is there, like, a college basketball player that you look at and say, like, why aren't NBA people thinking about him in, like, an NBA capacity? Like, why don't they consider this guy an NBA player? Like, is there a guy that you think will be a standout NBA player?
Ooh.
It's a tough question on the spot. See, we create the questions and give them to you so you're prepared.
I'm trying to think of someone who...
That would require me to prepare.
I'm trying to think of someone who, you know, like a... I mean, maybe like a Joel Berry.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. I don't really dig him at all.
I'm just trying to think of bigger names that are not... you know, not expected to be NBA players, that I wouldn't be surprised. Just because Barry can shoot the ball. Like, I mean, I don't know how. I mean, he shot it all right off the dribble this year, if I remember correctly, right? Or is he better catch and shoot?
He actually did shoot a little better in transition off the dribble this year. I saw him favoring the ankle heavily in the Final Four. Like he normally would have pulled on a couple threes a little quicker, but I didn't see it happening.
Well, I can tell you why people don't really think of him in that way. I think that even though he was like a 4 or 5 star recruit, he went to Hoop Summit and had, I think he might have been like the worst like American player at Hoop Summit in the last decade. Like the worst performance like of a player. Like he was really bad there. And it probably put him behind the eight ball a little bit in terms of NBA evaluation. I think that he's, you know, put himself back on the market in some way, but he's not like a crazy athlete. And I think that he gets overrated sometimes. This is the reason that I don't really, like, I don't know that I would consider him a top 10 point guard in college basketball. I think he gets overrated because of his, I would say because of North Carolina's dependence on him. The point guard position at North Carolina is just so incredibly valuable because of the way that Roy Williams runs his offense, in that he doesn't really have like set plays. Like there's the traditional roll the ball out. Roy just rolls the ball out on the floor and, you know, tells them to go, like, you know, stigma that is attached to him and why people underrate him as a coach. But I think a lot of it is because he drills his guys so well during practice and has them so set in terms of the way that they operate on the floor within their offenses and within their, you know, freedom-based, motion-based offense, that, like, it's fine. But the point guard position is so valuable to what they do that Joel, I think, sometimes gets overrated just because – You know, without him, they fall apart on the basketball floor.
Yeah, I guess like it's very similar to, you know, a Marcus Paige career for North Carolina. You know, another guy who was like a veteran guy. He's up in the rafters of UNC, but really nothing to show for it at that next level.
Yeah, and I like Marcus a little bit more, but I think that might just be like a personal preference, because like I just like Marcus as a dude. Like I think he's super thoughtful and super smart. And not to say like Joel Berry's dumb.
I don't know why you're a Joel Berry hater. I kind of have like that short two guard crush on Joel Berry.
Yeah. Well, I can see why you would like him.
Did I just tell you why?
Yeah. Well, like even like Nigel Williams-Goss is another one, right? Like he's a really good basketball player, but like I don't think that he was a first team All-American this year. I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that Gonzaga won a lot of games. And he was the point guard and lead scorer on a team that won a lot of games. But they were more of a team-based structure than they were like an individual-based structure. Like you look at what Nigel can do at the next level. He's not a great athlete. You saw him kind of get swallowed up against higher level athletes in the NCAA tournament against West Virginia and even to a lesser extent against North Carolina. So I'll be interested to see what happens with him as well. You know, what does he do? But
I just thought of a name of who I think is going to be a guy people aren't talking about. Malik Newman.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that. Malik, if you listen to people out of Kansas, and I always say to like caution this kind of stuff, because, you know, coaches will always say that, oh, you know, if we had Malik this year, we would have gone to the Final Four, or, you know, would have won the title. But like, the reports out of Kansas about Malik Newman are good.
I think a year of just practicing, getting a little bit better defensively, and then getting to play alongside Devontae Graham, I think he'll be the person that maybe he's not, you know, All-American next year, but ends up being a top 10 player of whatever class that he comes out in.
Yeah, that might not be crazy. I mean, he was coming into last year, I had him at like 14 or 15 on my big board. So I would, you know, I think it was just a really bad fit with Ben Howland, and I hope the best for him. I hope he kind of figures shit out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it showed for me why you don't go to a school like Mississippi State if you want to try to be a one and done NBA player.
Yeah, I go back and forth on that stuff. I think that if you're going to go to a school like that, you have to have a certain amount of freedom.
Yep.
Like you have to go to like NC State, where
or Lorenzo Romar recruits you.
Yeah. Exactly. Like where, like, you know, Johnny Jones will say, okay, this is your team. We're going to run the floor. We're going to do this. Right. We're going to do that. Just go. Ben Hallen's not going to do that.
No, not at all. And that's what I kind of like. I was talking to somebody, a friend of mine who's a Kansas fan, and I kind of reminded him that, like, he's like, well, look at the numbers Fultz put up. And I was like, well, if Malik Newman played at Washington, he probably scored 24 a game, too.
Yeah,
it's all relative.
Right.
It is. And that makes translation of college stats really difficult. I think they have value, but I think a lot of it does have to do with, you know, scouting and watching games.
Well, here's one for you that we got asked by Jacob Hayslip. Speaking of like a guy like Newman, who, you know, you think he's going to be done. Guys who declare without an agent, who has the most to gain in coming back?
Oh, man, in coming back.
Yeah. Is it a guy like Bam?
Who
you were a little higher on?
Well, he'd be one if Bamba doesn't go to Kentucky, but like if Bamba goes to Kentucky, he's kind of screwed.
He's a secondary option in the post.
Right. Oh man. I'm just like looking through, like, you know, DJ Wilson could really help himself, I think. He's like a really big 6'10", long armed athlete.
Could John Collins get any higher if he comes back?
Yeah, if he does the same thing that he did this year, except adds defense, I mean, he could go top 10 next year.
Now, I'm just trying to think of guys that could make the jump, because right now everyone in the top 10, I believe, has declared, expected top 10, has declared with an agent.
Well, like, the most to gain often comes from a guy that is not considered a first-round pick, right? That, like, could really...
Not Ivan Rabb.
Yeah, like not like the exact opposite of Ivan Rabb. Like if you're a top 20 projected as a top 20 pick right now, you only have a certain amount that you can move up, right?
Right. Right.
So, you know, man, that's such a tough question.
I'm sorry I'll give you some time to think about
please
this.
Please do. Yeah.
Yeah. So something I just thought of that, you know, may play to his advantage. The chronic tripper, who we all know is Grayson Allen, he might have made the best decision in coming back to school. He didn't announce, but I'm seeing he's leaning like he's coming back. I don't know why he wouldn't come back. He can be the guy for Duke, and look how heavy this draft is this year.
Yeah,
it just is to me. That's a huge opportunity for him to come back, be the guy, raise his stock, get his image back on track. If he can, so to speak. I mean, he'll always be a Duke player that many people like to hate. But in terms of, you know, being on the national scale for doing some nonsense, he's got a chance to come back, make it right, have a good season, and then go first round next year.
Yeah, I totally agree with you in terms of his draft stock. Like, he could absolutely help himself by returning. Also, like, on some level, I'm sure he's just like, okay, I really don't want to go through this bullshit again, personally. You know, like, I feel like that's a reason to not return next year. Like, you could just decide, like, okay, I'm graduating this summer. I don't want to be the most hated person in college basketball again next season. Like, because anything that you talk about, anyone like who knows him.
And he would get buckets in the D League if he was ever down there.
Yeah, he absolutely would. But, like, anyone who knows him, too, like, he doesn't like the attention, apparently. Like, he is not someone that embraces being the most hated person in college basketball. Like, JJ Redick on some level kind of embraced it. Christian Laettner embraced it. But like, from what I was told about Grayson Allen, like, he doesn't really enjoy that kind of, you know, that kind of attention in some way.
I got to intervene real quick again, because I was just watching Frank Kaminsky just get dunked on by someone on Atlanta. And I went all the way to Milwaukee last night to watch Frank play. And he was 1-for-12. So I just want to give a shout out to Frank, because I love him. And I'm excited that he's living in the West Loop in Chicago this summer. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But stop sucking.
Speaking of breaking news, Jared Allen is now signing with an agent.
Yeah, I think that's was going to
smart,
happen.
Right?
Yeah, I think that he's my pick right now among the big guys to be the first off the board. Because, again, kind of like how I said earlier with Miles Bridges, how I think a lot of people kind of tuned out Michigan State. people absolutely tuned out Texas and kind of didn't recognize what he was doing. In the Big 12 season, he was averaging 16-10-2. That is insane for like an 18-year-old freshman without a point guard, because a lot of people like Andrew Jones, and I don't really get that one. You know, some people think he could be a first-round pick this year. He's an athlete. I don't really know what else he brings to the table right now. So he's, yeah, I think that Jared Allen's making the right call. The guy, I actually thought of one that I think could really help himself this next year going into the 18 NBA draft. I think Deng Adel at Louisville could really help himself.
Yeah, he didn't really make the jump that I think everyone thought he would this year.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be like a combo forward that could like run pick and rolls as a ball handler, or you know, be the screener for a guy like a Quentin Snyder or something. Right. And those guys are super rare, like guys who can do both of those, like handle both of those aspects on the basketball floor, because it makes you really difficult to kind of switch defenders onto you, especially with a guy like Adel who can take players into the post and score. If he does that and kind of becomes Louisville's go-to guy next year, which without Donovan Mitchell, I think he can do. I think he could go in the first round next year if he decides to return.
Yeah, because what is he, like 6'8"?
Yeah, he's like 6'8", 6'7", something like that. Has not like a crazy wingspan, but he's not totally unlike Justin Jackson last year in terms of like frame and dimensions. If anything, he's a little bit stronger than Justin. But like, you know, 6'8", 6'10", 6'11", wingspan. Yeah, I like Deng Adel is that pick.
Now, you know, we are talking a lot about first round talent. How many tiers are there in the first round? Like, you know, I think everyone agrees there's kind of, at least to me, there's a clear top 12, but in there, is there two tiers within that top 12? Because it seems like everyone's saying, well, you want to be in the top 6 or top 7.
Yeah, I would say that I would have like a mini tier for Fultz at number 1.
Yeah.
Like, I do think that he's the best prospect. But like, all four of the top four, you know, Fultz, Tatum, Jackson, Ball, for me in that order. You could say that they're tier one. Then De'Aaron Fox, Dennis Smith, Malik Monk, Jonathan Isaac, Miles Bridges, Frank Ntilikina, Lauri Markkanen would be like your next tier down to 11.
Right.
And then you get like the Terrence Ferguson, the bigs like Jared Allen and Hartenstein and, you know, Zach Collins. I think Zach Collins is a guy that could move into that top tier, that second tier. But, you know, Justin Patton and John Collins and Bam Adebayo and Harry Giles and guys like that, I would say that goes down to like 23 or so. And then after that, you have like a big like 25 to 45 range with guys like Donovan Mitchell and Juwan Evans and Monte Morris and Josh Hart and players like that. So Caleb Swanigan is another pretty good example of that. So yeah, I think that there are probably like four tiers or so, something like that. But it's a really strong draft. I mean, again, like I said, someone like Jonathan Isaac, who I have at number 8, would very clearly be the number 3 overall prospect in the 2016 draft. Someone like Juwan Evans, I would have right around like the 10 range in the 2016 draft. So I think that whenever you get kind of into this tier system, I would just keep in mind that, you know, this is a really strong draft. And even if we're considering tiers, the tiers overall are going to be much higher, like higher level quality players than we saw in last year's draft. Because like even the top, like I would take Markelle Fultz over Ben Simmons. I would take Jason Tatum over Brandon Ingram. I would take Josh Jackson over Brandon Ingram. So I think that this is going to be an incredibly strong draft where we really see an influx of perimeter talent in a way that we haven't seen in the NBA in a while. If you look back through like the last four drafts going back to 2013, really only Dennis Schroeder and D'Angelo Russell have developed into like, you know, full on starting point guards in today's NBA. And even Russell is having a little bit more success playing the two, you know, and you could say that Marcus Smart is also having success, but he's definitely more of an off ball guard now that really defends and, you know, gets into guys on that end and, you know, provides value in that way. So I am excited to see guys like Fultz, Ball, Smith, Fox, Ntilikina, Juwan Evans, Monte Morris. Like a lot of these guys are really going to help the point guard position in terms of youth and like a youth movement in today's NBA?
Now I have to ask this. We'll let you get out of here. We're running you long. You have a podcast still to record for yourself tonight, but
I am always happy to be on podcasts as long as possible. Danny LaRue and I just recorded like a 2-hour podcast.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. You love podcasts so much. Talk.
I'm happy to take whatever time. I always say yes to whoever asks, and I'm very thankful that, Riggs asks me on. So Ben, please, whatever question you have.
It wasn't a question, just a statement. I was going to say, I've really enjoyed having you on. And I look forward to more conversations in the future.
Yeah. You can just yell at me whenever. I don't really care.
I will.
Just tell me I'm wrong regularly. I enjoy when Seth Greenberg tells me I'm wrong regularly.
Yeah, he's wrong regularly a lot too.
I think Seth's pretty good, to be honest. And
my problem with Seth is when he gets to be Mr. Know-It-All, like about the tournament and everything, you're the guy who couldn't even get into the tournament. Don't tell me what like credentials you need to get in when you couldn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who like didn't play high level basketball, I'm just like, I'm going to stay quiet on that one. But like, I think that Seth does. I think Seth's smart. He's very good at talking. And I also think that he comes at it from the angle of coaches who have a very real, tangible gain by, having kids stay in college and be developed by college basketball.
Yeah, and everyone does it too. He just kind of gets on these, like the transfer epidemic and things like that, where I'm just like,
it's the same with Dan Dock as well. Like Dan.
Yeah, right. Like they know the game inside and out, but it's just like,
right.
Just stop doing those hot takey things like to draw interest. And I would listen to you 10 out of 10 times instead of 8 out of 10 times.
Yeah, right. we also need to touch on, the recent Dan Dockett and Frank Kaminsky feud about being paid in the NCAA and all that. So letters of intent, we're going to talk about that. And then also we got to touch on the NCAA paying people.
Yeah, because we're doing an airing of grievances probably for our next episode.
Yeah, I mean, no college basketball player, I just want to say this now, no college basketball player should sign a letter of intent.
No, somebody brought it up and I forgot. Brandon Knight never signed a letter of intent. And I remember people freaking out being like, well, what's that mean? Is everyone going to start doing this now? And I haven't really heard any big names not signing one.
More people do it than I think gets realized.
Let on. Yeah.
Yeah. There have been a few like very high level prospects that ended up not doing it.
Yeah. I mean, no, they shouldn't. They shouldn't. Just protect
protect yourselves, young fellows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we'll let you get at it with this last question, which is near and dear to my heart, which was asked by Rec Hoops. How can the Knicks not screw up this draft?
There's actually one question I want to answer to now that I think about it that I got on this one too, but how do the Knicks not screw up this draft? Draft De'Aaron Fox, draft a pick and
just
roll.
Just get into the top six, and I think you can't screw it up.
Yeah, just draft a pick-and-roll point guard, like a guy like Dennis Smith, a guy like De'Aaron Fox. They'll be fine as long as they're able to do that. Someone also asked, like, I forget exactly what it was, but where would the best fit for Lonzo Ball be, and who would be the funniest player to get drafted by the Kings, or who is the Kingsiest player? I think that Lonzo Ball going to the Kings would be the funniest possible outcome.
Oh, see, because I think Bam Adebayo, because all they do is draft Kentucky bigs.
Oh, that would be funny, too. But, like, can you imagine LeVar Ball and Vivek on the sidelines? Oh. It'd be amazing.
And throw in Vlade.
Throw in Vlade, chain smoking, and, you got
that would be a good one.
Nothing would ever get done.
I feel bad because he's the Kingsiest player.
Well, he's not like the Kingsiest player in the traditional sense. And like underrated, the Kings have been super fun over the last like few weeks.
Yeah, like they've
I'm doing like a big thing on Scal for Sporting News this week. I talked to him for like 25 minutes on Sunday. And I was like, dude, you guys have been like super fun. Like, you know, what do you attribute that to? And he was like, yeah, like we just have a lot of really good shooters. We like to space the floor. That's what our offense is predicated on. And I was like, yeah, like that. I mean, maybe getting rid of, and I didn't say this to him, but like the more I thought about it, I was like, yeah, maybe like getting rid of DeMarcus is kind of really helped them in a way.
I mean, it's helped Scal.
It certainly helps Scal. Scal's
giving him a
awesome
chance. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, even like, Papianis, like Papi, it's funny that you say Kentucky bigs, cause like Papianis was thinking about going to Kentucky for a while, wasn't
right
he?
Like if you mention you got recruited by Kentucky, I'm pretty sure the Kings will draft you. Unless you're a guard, then the Suns will take you. that's all that happens. Like they just load up on Kentucky bigs and guards out west.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. I love the West Coast. You guys come out here to LA. You'll have a couch to sleep on. You will have drinks to be had. Whatever
I've
you guys need.
I've never been to LA. Why not? I've never been to California.
I've been planning a trip for a little bit. I'm good buddies with James Lafferty. And his business manager is a pretty good guy, Eric Nelson. They're out in LA, so I need to go out there and experience one night of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Is that where you are?
I live like literally right in the middle of Hollywood. I can see Sunset Boulevard from my apartment or like from my like balcony or whatever. It's not as exciting as I feel like a lot of people think it is. If you live like I live like right in the middle of West Hollywood and Hollywood, you know, like there are boulevards that get wild. You know, Sunset Boulevard and West Hollywood gets a little bit wild at night, but yeah, it's a great place. It's a great spot. I love it.
It's just a whole nother world out there.
It's definitely a whole nother world. Like coming from someone like I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I mean, like I love Pitt's campus. It's very different from
hilly.
Yeah, way.
It's very hilly. It's very hilly. And then I went to like Ohio State, which is like the least hilly place on the planet. It's just flat earth the entire way. But Hollywood's like a totally different scene from there. I was texting Riggs yesterday. Oscar from The Office was like sitting a table away from me, like tweeting at breakfast, like while I was eating at this place, like right down the street from me. And it's just like it's the weirdest vibe. It's unlike anything else, like in the world that I have been to. It's the weird, like it all sounds like humble braggy, but it's not humble braggy whenever you're out here. Like it's just a weird,
you just get used to being, around like those type people. And it's kind of similar in Nashville. Like when you live in Nashville, you go to the same bars and like all the same country singers are out at every bar and every night. It's like the same thing for Hollywood.
Yeah. I'm like trying to think like, you know, like I don't do like the club scene or anything like that. Like I'm only 26, but like, it's just not my thing. Like I would imagine that like you could do that. It was funny. My birthday's on Sunday. And I saw that Doc Rivers like mentioned Catch, which is like this like trendy like Hollywood dinner spot or whatever. And my girlfriend and I are trying to go there for my birthday on Sunday. And I was like, what the hell? Like, I didn't even realize that was like a Hollywood hotspot. Like, I didn't realize that was a thing that people do. So it's just a weird ass vibe out here. It's a fun vibe, though. It's a really good time. Like I said, anytime you guys want to come out, let me know. And you know, Riggs is in Ohio. I'll be back in Ohio two times this summer. I won't be in Cincinnati though.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it will happen at some point. I know you got to get to your podcast. We're running long too, and I'm not gonna lie, I'm tired, man. I was at the Milwaukee Bucks Hornets games last night, and I need to sit down and watch 24 and relax for a little bit. So I'm done with you.
I don't blame you.
All right. So again, Vicini. Follow Sam at Sam_Vicini, VECENIE. To spell that out for you, Ben, so you can remember that one. Subscribe to his podcast, Game Theory Podcast. I've been on it a handful of times. I obviously endorse it. You can read Sam at Vice and Sporting News. Reminder to follow us and subscribe to our podcast, do all that good stuff. Like we said, we're gonna try to be climbing the rankings with our guys over there at Redline Radio. And rate, review. We do have prizes. If you remember to leave your Twitter handle or screenshot it and send it to us, we know who you are.
How many of the prizes are signed Ben Brust headshots?
We haven't done that yet, but that might be one.
They're devaluing fast.
Sam, anything else that you want to plug?
No, I really enjoy both of these guys. They do a great job. I'm very thankful that I got to be the second guest to come on the show. I'm sure that you guys follow them, but anyone who's finding this through me tweeting it out or something like that, I would fully endorse both of them. They do a great job.
And Vicini, you got to go to my Twitter and check out one of my recent pictures. I don't think you saw it. You're going to respect the hell out of it.
It's a nerd picture for you too.
How nerdy is this photo? Let's see.
Star Wars.
It's Star Wars. Let's see.
Which I can't stand.
Yeah, why don't you like Star Wars?
Because I'm a Neanderthal.
Oh,
and
this
like
is
dumb
super
comedies.
Nerdy, and I love it. Is this like a?
It's like a canvas. Like it's a 5-set canvas.
That's amazing. That's super cool. I would everyone go see this. It's 137 likes, for God's sake. This is awesome, Ben.
It's too low. I mean, I expected more nerds out there.
You gotta like use the proper hashtag, and I'm sure they'll come running.
So
Nerd Alert's a pretty good hashtag for this.
You like the Nerd Alert. I also had just bought Rogue One at Target, so my collection is now up to date.
Underrated. I've been trying to convince Laura to watch it again with me. We went to see it in theaters. She didn't like it. So like, I don't know when the next time I'm going to watch Rogue One is.
Your life has run that much?
Well, I mean, I can watch it like whenever, but like what ends up happening is like whenever I'm like at home at night, she works at like in her office throughout the day and then comes home. Like I try to at least hang out with her regularly. like I only have like a certain amount of time that I can hang out with her. I can watch it like on a Saturday afternoon if I want though.
Yeah. Well, I had to show
you
that.
Told no pretty quick. I'm well aware of this situation.
Yeah. Reeves is getting married this summer. He can talk to you about it.
And I'm single living in a bachelor pad. And that's why I have Star Wars off.
In trying to find a volleyball player.
So far, the formula doesn't seem like it's going to add up.
Oh, man.
We'll see. Hopefully this episode finds someone, but we're getting loose. Let's let Sam go to his podcast. Again, thanks a lot to Sam. Follow him. Obviously, he does a lot of college basketball stuff, but he does a ton of draft stuff, so this is prime time for him. Follow the show, Fundamentally SD. I said it earlier. I gave out our Instagram or Reddit account earlier, but it's Fundamentally SD on Twitter. Make sure you follow it. Thanks again, Sam.